listener production.
Please leave your message after the tone.
Why am I jealous of my ex?
I am so stressed all the time.
How do I get into a routine?
Is TikTok making me anxious?
I think I'm being manipulated.
Someone told me you could live with half a brain.
This is Do You Fucking Mind? Mindset Hacks for a Badass Life, hosted by me, Alexis Fernandez.
Hello, my beautiful beans. Welcome to the episode of today. Today is the trauma bonding episode. This episode, we're going to be breaking down trauma bonding. Now, the other day, I put a little question box in my Instagram saying, questions on trauma bonding, let me know which ones you'd like me to answer so I can be as thorough as possible and cater to my audience. However, I interestingly got a lot of people asking for information about something that's not actually trauma bonding, but is called trauma bonding. And I started doing a bit of research into it. And there's so much writing on what trauma bonding actually is, more from like, you know, psych papers and things like that. And then there's more the, you know, the everyday pop psychology where trauma bonding is something completely different. So let's talk about what trauma bonding is and isn't. The one that it isn't, which is actually bonding over shared trauma, which is not trauma bonding, although I think instinctively the name trauma bonding sounds like it should be bonding over shared trauma, but it's not. I am going to be covering bonding over shared trauma at the end of the episode just because there were so many questions and I think it's only fair to address both things. Before we do that, life update. Honestly, life is good. Can't complain. I'm obsessed with my dog. Obsessed. His name's Habib. He's amazing. He's a rescue. I went to the Easter show the other day. My brother-in-law is a wood chopper, like a legitimate lumberjack, chops fucking wood hardcore at the Easter show. And we were looking, so we go every single year. I go with my sister. We always like, it's just so fun. We love it. Anyway, so we were looking at this little stall for greyhounds, like adopt a greyhound. And Tyrone and I were so close to just biting the bullet and adopting a greyhound, this three-year-old adorable girl, so cute. But then we thought, this is outrageous. Tyrone and I live in this like one-bedroom apartment with this massive 40-kilo dog already. Imagine bringing in another dog. So look, it's in our future that when we have a bigger home, we will buy a dog for Habib so Habib can play with probably a greyhound. Also, I'm huge on rescuing animals after rescuing Habib. So if anyone's thinking about getting a dog, rescue a dog, rescue the dog, go to the pound. Okay. Now let's get into the actual topic of today's episode, which is trauma bonding. Like I said, let's talk about what it is versus what it is not. Now, trauma bonding is different to bonding over shared trauma. So there doesn't actually seem to be a word for it, for bonding over shared trauma, or a term for it. That's, I think, why people call it trauma bonding, but it's not. And like I said, it does intuitively sound like the term trauma bonding would fit that scenario. But that is completely different. Trauma bonding is when a person experiencing abuse at the hands of another person, develops an unhealthy attachment to that abuser. Okay? So this goes alongside defending the actions of the abuser, feeling loyal to the abuser. Due to this, they isolate themselves from other people and they do this in the hope that their abuser will change their behavior, will come good. Now, Stockholm syndrome is a form of trauma bonding, but it is only one facet of trauma bonding. If you are trauma bonding or if you're trauma bonded, doesn't mean you have Stockholm syndrome. Stockholm syndrome is where someone is literally captive and they develop positive feelings towards the captor. So that's obviously quite specific. Also, not everyone in an abusive relationship experiences a trauma bond. Okay. So with trauma bonding, and I'm going to go in depth into it in just a second. So I won't delve into it now. But with trauma bonding, there is this conscious awareness that the individual wants to stay in that relationship. It's not that they're not aware that the abuse is happening. They're aware, but they also try and excuse all these things because they want it to work and they want to stay in this relationship. There are other forms of abusive relationships where someone is not trying to kind of kid themselves into staying. It's a different kind of abuse, or it might be a similar kind of abuse, but there's many reasons why someone would stay in a relationship, and being trauma bonded is not the only reason why someone would stay in a traumatic or an abusive relationship. Okay. So someone might stay, I mean, this goes without saying, but someone might stay in an abusive relationship because they fear that they can't leave. They fear that certain resources would be removed from them if they left, that they wouldn't be able to have access to their children. You know, it might be more fear-based, more so than being attached to this person. Okay. So we're specifically referring to trauma bonding, not every single person in an abusive relationship. So I just wanted that to be very clear because there's so many different forms of how someone can feel in an abusive relationship. How does it develop? How does trauma bonding even begin? There's many ways that trauma bonding can manifest. You can be someone that has had a completely healthy upbringing, and then you find yourself in an emotionally abusive relationship, and you ended up bonded to this person because of how they got you into that cycle. It is a cycle. I'll break it down in a second. Or you could be exposed to really unhealthy relationships from childhood, because mind you, trauma bonding isn't it's not necessarily just romantic relationships. You can be trauma bonded with a parent, an abusive parent. I'll go into it in a second, but there's many, it applies to all kinds of relationships. But one of the reasons that people trauma bond is because they have learned an unhealthy form of attachment. So when their carer was the abuser, for example, that then instills this cycle of bonding with your abuser. And the parent-child trauma bond is quite a common thing because they are your parent. It is your first representation of love. It's your first representation of what a loving relationship should be, or what you obviously believe a loving relationship should look like. And if a child's abused by their parent, they're going to, not always, but often they will grow up, at least while they're young, and look at this behavior alongside other loving, caring behaviors that the parent would display at times. So it kind of fluctuates between abuse and then love and care, and look at it as, well, that was how they loved me. That was their way of loving me. That was love. It was a form of love. It might not have been pure. Yes, I've seen other examples of love where the abuse didn't happen around me, but they love me in their own way. And that's just the best they knew. So you come up with all these excuses for the abuse, saying like, they don't know better. That's just them. And at a really young age, it's really difficult to pull apart healthy and unhealthy behaviors critically. As a child, it's really difficult to do that. We're also not equipped to do that. And then on top of the fact that even removing age aside, when you are in an abusive relationship, when something's really weighing on you emotionally, it's also hard to look at something critically as well, but even harder for a child. So kids don't analyze things like that. They're not going to question things like that. And they will often find a way of somehow blaming themselves or including themselves into the reason as to why the abuse happened, or they'll blame some other external thing that has been the cause of this abusive behavior from their parent towards them. So that way, the person that they love, their parent, is always good in their eyes, because the child will try and always justify why the person they love so much can love them, but still hurt them. So they'll come up with all these reasons why. And that's a trauma bond. So they're defending, they're protecting, they're making excuses for, they're trying to be as accommodating to the abuser. And then this may or may not then repeat itself in other relationships. But like I said, you can have a completely secure upbringing, not abusive at all, and still find yourself in a romantic, emotionally abusive relationship and be trauma bonded there. Okay. It can happen. I feel like I was borderline trauma bonded in one of my relationships after doing all this research, and it's fucking hectic. So like I said, there's many categories of relationships. It's not just romantic, or should I say domestic abuse situations. I don't know how romantic it is when you're being abused. It can be, but it also happens, like I mentioned, in child abuse situations. It also happens in cults. If you've ever found yourself in a cult, for those of you out there, religious cults, elder abuse, and in something called exploitative employment. So this is if you're in like illegal migration, you don't have documentation and your employer is kind of the person that's helping you stay there, but then they abuse you in certain ways, but you're indebted to them and you want to see the good in them. So it happens in that scenario, parent-child relationships into adulthood, not just as kids, and more. So it's pretty broad. Now, before I go into how to identify trauma bonding, let's talk about the 7 stages of trauma bonding. So trauma bonding normally starts with love bombing. Love bombing, I've got a whole episode on that, but love bombing is basically where you shower somebody with all the good things. You shower them, and it doesn't necessarily have to be gifts, but it could be gifts, experiences, actual love, affection, compliments. You feel like this person is so amazing. The acts of service, they'll drop anything for me. They'll always do favors for me. They'll pick me up at a moment's notice. They'll be like, you don't have to drive. I'll drop you off. Don't worry. I'll do this for you. I'll do that. Or you relax, you sit, I'll cook for you. All these things, they're giving you gifts it's love bombing. Now, mind you, there are some people out there that are just like that. But the difference between a love bomber and someone who is just like that naturally is that a love bomber, love bombing is not sustained. It is not long-term. It does not last long-term. The intention of love bombing is not so you feel loved. It's to get an outcome. It's to manipulate you. So if you're with someone who's like that and it's been a year, safe to say you're just with a fucking legend who adores you and just loves to do things for you, okay? It's not love bombing. That's stage 1. Stage 2 is gaining trust. When you love bomb someone, when you're the victim of love bombing, it's very easy to start to trust this person. It's very easy to start to be like, I really like you. I see you in the best light. You're so amazing. I've never met anyone like you. You start to open up, be vulnerable, and trust them. Then it's criticism. They'll start to knock you down a few pegs. They'll start to criticize your friends, how you do this, what you're doing, how you look, all sorts of criticism. They'll try and like bring you down. They'll try and, you know, hack away at your self-esteem, at your confidence, at how you feel about yourself as an individual. Then comes manipulation. In that can also be gaslighting. Now, gaslighting is a very specific thing. I've got a whole episode on gaslighting, but gaslighting isn't just where someone denies something and people are arguing, did this happen? Did this not happen? Gaslighting is literally trying to make you believe that something that actually happened didn't happen. They're trying to manipulate your thoughts. So you start to doubt your own judgment. So for example, if there was a red car parked in your driveway and then you had seen it, it was obvious that you saw it. And then you said, what was with that red car parked in the driveway? They'll be like, there was no red car parked in the driveway. And it's like, no, we walked past it together. You saw it. We both saw it. We both mentioned it. They'll be like, that never happened. I don't know what you're talking about. So literally they'll deny reality, okay? That is gaslighting. That's a really mundane example, but it happens in all sorts of areas and they do it to shake your confidence in your own judgment, in your own memory, in your own ability. So you start to doubt yourself as a human. Other kinds of manipulation can occur, like they'll emotionally manipulate you into feeling guilty. So you do something for them. So you feel like you have to sleep with them more often than you feel comfortable doing so. So you feel like you have to start to do more things or you feel like you can't hang out with certain people because whatever. But manipulation is that one. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, step 4. Then we've got resignation from the abuse, from the person who's being abused. They are resigning to this situation, which also is known as fawning or people pleasing, but it's a bit deeper than that. But it's basically just going along with it. It's after several times of this head-to-head, like clashing with the abuser, these really irrational arguments that you can't seem to ever, you just can't argue properly or you can't have a debate because they just fly off the fucking handlebars. You can't seem to like get on their level. You can't get through to them. It's exhausting. They're yelling or whatever. It's just horrible. And so you end up being like, the next time something bad happens, you're like, oh my God, I do not have the fucking bandwidth, the mental capacity to endure another one of these fights. So I'm just going to be like, yeah, you're right. Oh yeah, no, I was wrong. It's fine. Like you fawn, you resign yourself. And that is so I used to do that. Oh my God. I had a relationship when I was 19 and I did that all the time. And then I had a relationship like 5 years ago where I did that all the time, where the fights and the way I was treated was so off the charts, horrible. The things that were said to me, how I was made to feel like an idiot, like just awful, screaming, horrible, that I would see it coming a mile away and I'd quickly be like, oh no, you're right. Oh, yep. I'd fawn. I'd do anything to avoid an argument. And they know that. They make these arguments so painful, so horrible. And that's part of their manipulation tactic, because they're like, I'm going to get it to a point where you're going to do anything to avoid it, which includes giving me the power, making me right, saying that you're wrong, saying that you're to blame. Okay. So resignation is a big step in it. And then distress, because of the resignation, because of all these things, you start to feel, the victim starts to feel extremely distressed. They kind of have a bit of an identity crisis. You start feeling a little bit lost with your life, a bit numb. The relationship kind of takes over and every other part of your life is kind of just, you know, a bit of like a limbo. You're not really sure who you are, what you stand for, kind of like this idea of feeling like a shell of your former self. I personally can definitely relate to that feeling of where I felt like a bit of a shell of my former self, but it was hard to put my finger on it. I couldn't really identify it, but the people around me definitely saw it. They definitely saw a shift. And that's part of the distress. You start to withdraw from certain things. You're less engaged. Sometimes it's with your friendships. Sometimes it's with some friendships and not others. And sometimes it's with, you know, hobbies that you normally like that you're not really kind of into. And you're kind of revolving your life around this relationship. And then lastly is repetition. And that is where the love bombing occurs again, okay? The interesting thing to note about a trauma bond is that it happens because of a cycle of abuse followed by positive reinforcement. Okay. So there's going to be some relationships where there's almost none of that positive reinforcement. It's just a horrible abusive relationship. Trauma bonding, the reason it occurs is because you've got, and this is the seventh stage of trauma bonding, all this horrible abuse happens. Then the abuser does this whole thing, this whole fucking song and dance, like, I'm so remorseful. I can't believe I did that. I feel so horrible. Let me make it up to you. I'll mend this. And they'll get you to trust. Not only will you start trusting, but you see a glimpse of who you fell in love with, of who you love, or you see the good in them. You're like, oh my God, they're back. Thank God. Oh my God. They feel really guilty. They obviously don't mean to abuse me because they have a conscience. They're apologizing. They feel so guilty. They, you know, so it's this like, trust me again. I'm so, you know, I'll make it up to you. But that is all just to get you to trust them again. And then things are really good. And then they take it away from you. It's all about power for the abuser. It's all about power. Now, it's not to say they don't love you, but they are aware of what they're doing. Okay. Whether they find it difficult to break the bond, whether it doesn't matter, they know what they're doing. And they are aware that they are apologizing and doing all of this just so you trust them again. Not because they feel crazy remorse for what they did. Because if they felt crazy remorse for what they did, they would take legitimate steps to not treat you like that again, which they don't do. They just want you to trust them, okay? They might think they love you, but it's more a need for power, a need for control. True love is not that, okay? True love is not this need to make you my possession. Well, it shouldn't be, okay? So you've got this cycle between abuse, which is followed by positive reinforcement, this regret, love, apology, making it up to the other person who's been abused. And then that person starts to feel hopeful and they start to feel safe again. And then that's when the steps start again. Okay. That's when you step two, three, blah, 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 starts again. So it's obviously a power imbalance. The abuser punishes and rewards. They hold all the cards. So one day they're inflicting abuse or hurt, and the next day they are comforting. And it goes again and again and again. So also, there's a whole bunch of other things to detect it. So I'll go through that now and then I'll break it down more. For it to be a trauma bond, the person who is the victim will try to defend the abuser. They'll try and justify their actions and they mean it. They're not just saying it as like, oh, but like they really, really look for what could have caused this? How can I defend them? And they mean it. Like they really want to defend this person. They want to see the good in them. They want to believe that they are a good person. So there must be another reason why they've behaved this way, because they're good. The abuse is not good. So the reason they abused me is because they were abused as a child, or the reason they abused me is because they have not slept in days and they're just at their wit's end, or they're really, really sick, or they're so stressed and they're supporting me and it's all on their shoulders. And so there's all these fucking reasons, you know, or they just had a horrible fight with somebody and they've just come and lashed out to me. Okay. But they will genuinely be like, they are good and the abuse is not really coming from them. It's coming from another area, another reason. They will agree with the abuser's excuses, reasons, more like excuses for why they have abused them. So like I said, you know, if a lot of people will say, well, I was abused as a child and this is just like my coping mechanism, whatever. There's never an excuse for abuse. No matter what you went through, never. I will take no excuse. None, none. It's awful what you went through. Still not an excuse. Still not a fucking excuse, okay? Oh, okay. They will distance themselves from relatives who are trying to help. They will even argue with their relatives, and by relatives also like close friends. So this can cause really big divides, and this is why it's really important to try and identify it in other people if you can see it happening to your friends or families, so you can know how to handle dealing with a victim of a trauma bond. I'm going to go through how to support a friend or a relative who's going through a trauma bond situation later on in the episode. They're unwilling to take steps to leave the situation because their intention isn't to leave. It's to get it to what it could be. It's to, this person is good and I love them so much. I'm attached to them. We can make it work. So they're not wanting necessarily to leave, at least not at this point. They trust the abuser despite all the wrongdoings. They will cover up for the abuser. So if it's physical abuse, they'll do anything so no one can see where the wound is or where the bruise is. They'll make all the excuses under the sun as to why they have a bruise or a scratch or, you know, all of that. They will think it's somehow their fault or that they have contributed to it. Like, I made them really stressed. I made them snap. I shouldn't have pushed them. I should have done more in this scenario. And if someone tries to help out or intervene, they will be very angry or defensive. And it's not just family and friends, but even strangers or a police officer, they will like snap and be very, very defensive, very cagey about it. They also genuinely believe that other people don't understand, that their situation is extremely unique, that they can identify trauma and abuse in other relationships. But for them, it's very unique. It's very different. You don't know this person like I know them. You don't understand their history. You don't understand the relationship that we have. This is like such typical like monologue that people go through. And when you step away from it and when you see other victims of abusive relationships and you hear them talk, you're like, oh, holy fucking shit. That was the narrative I was saying either in my head or to other people. They genuinely believe like, because you are not in my relationship and you don't understand the history, you're not going to understand why he lashed out, why she lashed out. You're not going to, you know, you're going to think that the abuse that you're experiencing is different to a typical domestic abusive relationship. It's different. And because of all of that, it's excusable because they're a good person, right? They're good. And the dynamic that we have is unique and no one understands. This is very unique. It's very like, it's really special what we have. Hot tip, it's not special what you have, okay? It's not. Now, no matter what this person has gone through, it is not your responsibility or your duty to be their punching bag so they can, you know, deal with their past abuse or their past problems, okay? Past abuse does not excuse or cancel out more abuse. I think we pity the abuser a lot. And when I say we, I'm speaking from if you are in an abusive relationship and you are dating someone who is an abuser, or if your parent is the abuser. I'm not saying we as in society, but if you're the victim of it, you look at them and you feel bad for them. Not all the time, but when they're remorseful, you're like, oh God, like, I get it. Like, I understand the pain that you're going through. Like, you really feel for this person and that's what makes you more attached and more like connected to this person. And then you feel bad that they went through abuse. Like the person that I dated, that he was abused as a child, right? He was beaten by his parents all the time. So, or father at least. So I felt really bad. I was like, this is horrible. No wonder you fucking lash out all the time. You poor fucking thing. But abuse is abuse, and it can take people a very long time to see this and to call it for what it is, because people don't like to admit that they think, oh, but if I admit it, I allowed myself to stay in an abusive relationship. But I think you can be, once you understand the cycle of abuse, you can be a lot kinder to yourself and not be so judgmental as to why you stayed in an abusive relationship for so long, because there's so much manipulation that goes on. It's not like you're allowing it or you're not. You were manipulated, okay? Now, why is it so hard to break out of a trauma bond? Firstly, because you've formed this intense loyalty at the expense of so many other things outside of this person, and probably at the expense of a lot of relationships as well. another reason why it's really hard to break out of a trauma bond is because of this positive reinforcement aspect of the relationship. So there's going to be a lot of comforting and I regret it. I'll make it up to you. If you ever tried to leave when times are tough, then you know exactly what this would look like. You're trying to leave when times are tough because like they just, they snapped. That's it. This is the last straw. I'm fucking out of here. I'm done. And the remorse, they will move the earth for you. It's really hard to walk away from that. You're like, here's the person that I adore, that I don't actually want to leave, but I just can't cop this anymore, who's now promising me the world. And they're now doing everything for me. They're treating me amazingly. It's like when we first met. I've got my person back. And they'll do it as long as it takes for you to drop that wall again and trust them again and feel attached again so you can't walk away. Then they've got a bit, then it's this build up until it gets really bad again. Then you're like, now I'm at my wit's end again. You fucking changed. You're abusing me again. I'm leaving. Then they do the same fucking thing. So it's really hard because when you're leaving is when they're giving you everything you've always wanted. It's really fucking hard. But you have to understand and identify the pattern of behavior. When you can identify the pattern of behavior, you know that a repeat of what happened is inevitable. And you just have to push past looking through all the smoke and mirrors and everything they're presenting, knowing that it's a manipulation tactic to get you to a point where they can control you again, to get you to a point where they have you in the palm of their hands, where they have the power. Because they've got the power all the time, but it feels like you've got the power when they're in this positive reinforcement, groveling, apologizing, regret. But they actually have the power. So that's another reason why it's very, very, very difficult. Another reason is that your confidence, your self-esteem, your self-perception, it's taken many, many blows in an abusive relationship. And it's not really easy to walk away and to feel like confident in your conviction and in your decision that this is the right thing for me. When your self-confidence is shot to pieces, it's really difficult to make an independent decision, especially one that requires you to be even more independent. You're breaking away from your partner. That's very fucking lot harder to do that when your self-confidence and your self-perception is shot to pieces, okay? And because of all of that, you're more inclined to stay with this person because you think that you are like lucky to have them. Warts and all, my self-confidence or self-esteem is kind of shot to pieces in this relationship and I've put this person a bit on a fucking pedestal. I've defended them. They are like my fucking person. I'm attached to them. So they're amazing. So then you think, I'm not going to get someone like this again. I'm not going to get a connection like this again. And then, of course, you create such a strong sense of connection, even though it's a very unhealthy one, that you believe that you need each other. You're like, what other couple could go through all this adversity and be as strong as we are? What other couple would, you know, like, yeah, the lows are low, but the highs are so high. The reason the highs are so high is because you've just been at the bottom, the depths of your despair, you've been treated like fucking shit. So then when they treat you well, in contrast, it feels amazing. It feels like this is the best relationship ever when it's good because the contrast is so extreme. People who are in a really healthy relationship never say the lows are low, but the highs are really high. They don't say that shit. That's excusing an unhealthy relationship, you know, because things are a lot more even. So just be aware of that really important thing, that really important idea of if you are in a healthy relationship, you're not going to be noticing those extremes because they don't exist. And the good times are often better than the good times in the abusive relationships. But because you don't have that harsh contrast, it's just a lot calmer. It's a lot more relaxed. It's not this volatile, like, oh my God, it's good again. I'm relieved. There's no relief because it's always good. You know, it's always at least respectful. Now, how do you escape? And by escape, how do you get yourself out of this situation? How do you step away from this trauma bond? Number one, you got to really start being honest with yourself about your situation. It's important to just journaling is a really good way to do it and start writing down how you really feel. How does it make you feel when this happens? How does it make you, do you think you've changed as a person? How has it affected your life, your relationship? Start to really get it out. And if you can, the next big thing to do is to open up to someone else about it in a judgment-free zone. Now, it's really difficult to do that because a lot of people who know you have probably seen a lot of what's going on, or they're suspecting that it's not really good. So you're very aversive to have these conversations with people that care about you because you think they're going to get really worked up on my behalf. They're going to be like, you need to get out of this. You need to. So what you can do is you pick someone who you think is going to be the easiest to talk to. There's going to be people that are really fiery and passionate, people that are more understanding, and say, listen, I need to talk to you. But one thing I really need from you is I don't need an answer. I don't even want a solution. I need a sounding board. I just need someone that I can talk to. Please just don't get fired up. Like, I just need that. And people, especially depending on the person you talk to, once they hear that, a lot of people who know you and who care about you will be like, this is a call for help and I need to just listen. When you have someone who will listen to you, then it's a lot easier for you to do your own, like, it's almost like self-therapy. That's why sometimes when something happens to you, it's good to talk about it a couple of times. So you're like, I'm just like, I'm getting it off. Like, I'm speaking about it, or I'm writing it down to get it out of my brain onto paper so I can analyze it a little bit better. So you can even say, I'm going through a lot of things in my mind and I need to just verbalize it so I myself can analyze it. But please, please don't lecture me right now. Please don't get worked up or angry. I just want. And they will, in most cases, be very receptive to that, and they will want to help you. Find other people, either in person or online through forums, who have gone through this as well. And you will see how your situation has been handled in the past. And you will see that there's a lot of people that have gone through a similar situation to your own. Now, while every relationship is unique, a lot of traits of trauma bonding is not unique, and it's really empowering to see other people's stories and see how they came out on the other end and how they healed from it and you know, developed after the relationship ended and their journey. You learn a lot from other people's journeys, okay? It's really reassuring for you. So you can reach out to people, you can just read about it, but that's a really good way to start feeling a bit more in control and empowered. Therapy, of course, is a really good way of putting things into perspective, looking at something critically. It can help you work through that trauma. It can help you with coping strategies to deal with it. Not everyone has access to therapy, but it is a great tool. Do things for yourself alone. Start to build alone time that's enjoyable, because then you start to be like, I am fun to be around myself. Like, I can be independent. I can start doing these things independently and enjoy myself. I can probably find other fun things to do. You know, if I can find fun things to do alone that I enjoy, then I am more empowered to do things, you know, with other, like that don't require being in this relationship or don't require doing everything with this partner. Hang out with friends more often and more of them. And if you see a big pushback from your partner, I mean, obviously that's a huge red flag, but if you see a big pushback, then, you know, it's basically an indication that your partner feels like they're losing control because they want to be able to control how isolated or not you are. So they will want you being friends with particular people that they approve of, or, you know, your family if they like your family, but not, you know. So regardless, it's still really important to start casting that net and interact with more and more and more of your friends and people and colleagues and things like that. It helps you zoom out and put life into perspective, and it helps you be like, wow, oh my God, if I had these normal relationships all the time, this would appear extremely unusual and unhealthy. But because I'm so cooped up in this world, it feels like it's justified and normal to me when it's not. So give yourself opportunities to zoom out as often as possible with other relationships and other experiences that don't include your partner. Do not wait for or expect your partner to change because there used to be good times. Now that you understand the cycle of it, they're not turning around and becoming the person that you want them to be and sustaining it. That's not happening. The past is the past. You've got to work on your current situation and don't let the good times of the initial stages of the relationship be the reason why you're clinging on to an unhealthy relationship, okay? You have to be really honest with yourself, and it's hard. to be like, those times are dead and gone and they're never coming back. And they were also a lie. One thing that really helped me move on from an emotionally abusive relationship is that I clung on so hard to the good times because they were so good. And then I had this realization of like, but if I can just look at those good times and know that the whole time it was good for me, it was a lie for him. This was his period of love bombing and manipulating to get to the next stage. He wasn't experiencing it the way I was. So when you look at it through those eyes, then you're a bit more cold and harsh and be like, fuck that shit. Fuck that shit. This was not a mutual shared experience. I loved it. They were waiting for the next step because they love the next step. So be really blunt with yourself and look forward to what's coming up next. Don't look backwards. Okay. It's done. It's dead in the water. Let's move ahead. And then lastly, I want you to realize that you are not responsible for them. You might feel guilty for leaving them. They might make you feel like they need you. They are not your responsibility. Okay. And you can still leave someone and feel guilty. You can deal with that guilt in other ways. You can find ways of coping with it and getting rid of it and realizing that it's not actually your fault. But don't wait till you don't feel guilty to walk away from a relationship. Just be like, guilt and all, I'm leaving. And then I can work on that feeling of guilt and work on letting go of that. But and if you're waiting around to you never feel guilty or for it to just maybe it'll end this way if we don't, that's not going to happen. And when you leave is when you're going to have the most resistance from this person. So expect it and prepare mentally for it. So you can be like, all right, I knew this was coming. This was going to happen. I saw this coming a mile away. I'm putting certain parameters in place for that. You know, I'm going to limit communication. I'm actually going to stay with my sister and not at home. I'm going to do all these things so there's less chances of me slipping back like I did all the other times. They are not your responsibility. It is not your job to coach them through their past traumas by letting them abuse you. Not your job. Nor should it ever be. Nor should it be anyone's job. The fact that someone was abused in the past is a tragedy. But like I said earlier, there is never, ever, ever a reason for you to be abused. Okay? Now, two parts left of this episode. I'm going to quickly go through if you are the friend, how to provide a really healthy, safe space. And then I'm going to go into a bonding over shared trauma and why that's so significant for a lot of people. If you are the friend, this is what you do. Number one, offer a safe space. You don't lecture them. Okay. It's really nice to be, oh, I knew this person was a fuckwit. I could say it. I never liked them. But what does that do? It massages your own ego being like, I was right. I was like, fucking who gives a fuck if you were right? We're here to be a friend to someone who's in an unhealthy, abusive relationship. You blowing your own fucking horn isn't helping. Like when I was breaking up, or going through that breakup, the amount of people that were like, oh, I knew he was an asshole, I could see it. I'm like, cheers, cunt, for telling me. Like, thanks for stepping in when it mattered. Or thanks for making me feel like an idiot. Now I feel like a dickhead because there's all these people that are like, oh, hey, I'm coming out of the woodworks to let you know that I saw that they were fucked in the head and I saw you date them. Like, what are you telling me? So don't be that person. Please don't be that person. Be a safe space. Be someone who's like, I'm here to listen to you. Talk to me. And instead of lecturing them, ask them questions. Get them to come to the realization themselves. Don't be like, I've got all the answers. I'm going to flex with all my... Ask questions. So instead of getting... Because I, as you can tell, I can get very fired up on behalf of other people and all of that. And if someone's asking for my advice, I'll fucking give it to them with no filter. However, if I'm trying to be someone's safe space when they're in an abusive relationship, then I'm going to be very aware of how I'm behaving in the conversations with this person. So don't get fired up and angry and, oh, they're fucked. I can't believe they did that. Because then they're like, oh, you're attacking this person that I still actually love. I need to pull back because I don't want them to be attacked. Because then if we do stay together, then everyone's going to hate them. So I've got to pull back. So just... don't freak them out by getting too, like you can blow up after the conversation when you're not in front of them and be angry. But when you're in front of them, keep it cool, keep it calm and collected. Don't make them freak out and pull away. Just ask them, you know, questions. And the questions that you can ask them are things like offering them new perspectives, just looking at things. Ask them, have you ever spoken to them like that? Or do you think that you want your partner to change? Do you see yourself wanting them to change? Do you think that they've changed? Do you think that they, like, do you think that they think that this behavior is appropriate? Like, you ask the question and then let them talk. And when you get someone to, this is what a lot of therapists do as well, and it's really, really effective, because you are trying to guide someone to reach the conclusion on their own. Yes, it feels great to have the answer and be the one that was right and whatever, but not in this situation. We're going to put that aside and we're going to be like, I want them to feel like they were empowered enough to come to this realization on their own. So I'm going to guide them with some questions. Some questions I'll just throw away, and other ones I'll be like, oh, I've never really thought about that ever. Or you could say, do you notice differences with who you are now? Do you think you're like, just really like, just ask and then see what comes off it. And then just be receptive to what they're saying. Keep it calm. Don't lecture them. Don't yell. Don't get angry. Don't say, don't threaten. Oh, I'm going to fucking, no. Okay. Also understand that it takes time. And the safer this person feels outside of the relationship, the higher the chance that they're going to feel okay when it is time for them to leave. It doesn't happen overnight. You can't make someone feel, oh, yep, I'm equipped. I've got all the tools I need to that in one conversation. It takes time, and you've got to be patient with this person. You've got to be like, you know, you've got all this support. You've got these people. We're all here for you. We're here. Whenever you're ready to leave the relationship, we'll welcome you with open arms. When you start to be like, oh, wow, I've got this person, all these people here that are fully supportive. They're not making me feel like a fucking idiot. They're not judging me for being in this relationship. They're not, you know, here to attack the person that I still love. They're just showing me that there is all this support on the other side. And when someone feels like they've got all this support on the other side, it's not to say that they're absolutely going to leave, but for sure it makes them feel way more empowered to be able to leave. Okay. You're trying to tip the scales in the favor of the person making the decision to leave. You're not trying to scare them. You're not trying to freak them out. You're not trying to make them protect their partner even more. It's not what you're trying to do. And then, of course, encourage all your other friends to be the same way, to be this epic safe space. You're not enabling by being a safe space. I think some people think, oh, but if I don't say what I think is wrong, then I'm enabling. No, you're not. The thing is, unfortunately, in an abusive relationship, they're already being told what to do, like manipulated, all of that. The last thing they want is more conflict outside of that, okay? You're not saying, oh, that's lovely that they do that. No, you're not. But you're also saying, you know, talk to me. You can always come to me. You can always talk to me. I never want to judge your situation. I just want to be here for you. I want to be your sounding board. I want to be your safe space. Okay? That's perfectly fine. You don't have to say you agree with the behavior. You can say, I disagree with this. Tell me how I can, like, how can I be of help? How can I? But you are that warm safe space. Not, oh, if you're going to stay with that abusive person, I can never talk to you again. Great, great. Now you've just pushed this person deeper into a hole of isolation. You yourself can say, oh, I need to back away from this person, whatever. But I think it's really unhealthy when people start making comments like that, because when someone's in an abusive relationship, they're not really the truest form of themselves. They're kind of a manipulated version of who they are. Okay. Now, lastly, let's go into bonding over shared trauma and what that is. There's not a word for it. So a lot of people just use trauma bonding instead, even though it's not. But the reason why it feels so significant and you get so bonded to someone when you experience shared trauma. Now, this could be we both went through a situation together, or it could be I had this experience, I've met you, you've had that experience, we've then spoken about it, and now we are bonding. We are so tight because we've both experienced a very similar situation to each other. And that's how we're getting to really get to know each other. So it obviously happens because you've had something that is emotionally significant happen to you. Trauma, and if we're talking about legitimate trauma, not trauma like, oh my God, I got fired, I'm traumatized. Like, I'm talking about real trauma. Real trauma is really difficult, if at all possible, to completely forget. It really, whether we like it or not, especially unintentionally, forms part of our identity. You can make it less of your identity for sure, but because it's so emotional and because it's really like carved out a portion of your life and been so instrumental, it is part of your identity. You carry it with you. A lot of people carry it with them. And it forms how they made decisions or how they evolved or how they grew, whether it's for the better or for the worse. So trauma is like a big, big, big part of your life, whether you like it or not. And to meet someone else, and of course, so then it's loaded heavily with emotions. So then you meet someone who's gone through the same thing. Instantly, you feel, I can be vulnerable with this person because you get me. You understand what I went through. So instead of this superficial getting to know someone like, oh, yep, how's the weather? Fucking, how was your weekend? You instantly are like, bang, I'm talking about really deep things. And I feel like I can talk to about it because you understand it. This is a no judgment zone. I am talking to you about things that I probably haven't even told my therapist about. I am spilling everything out and it's being received with so much understanding. And you're now contributing to this conversation in a way that is so different to me just telling the story. I can like bounce off you and it's so, we're vulnerable that I've gone from like step one to step 20 as far as getting to know someone on an emotional, you know, vulnerable level. It's happened like bang, instantly with this person because we've cut through all the bullshit to get to know someone and we just know each other so well based on our vulnerability and something that is such a big part of our life, okay? That is why the bond occurs, because it's not like a friendship where you're talking about events and circumstances and we get together and we watch the footy all the time. That's a good friendship. Like you could have a nice friendship, but it takes so much longer to get to know this person on an emotional, vulnerable level at their deepest emotional feelings and their fears and how they healed. You're not talking about that when you're just like, let's have like a bottomless brunch and let's go watch the rugby. Like that. Those conversations are probably not happening. So you might think, I've known this person for fucking 2 months and I know them better than all my friends. It's because you have an insight into a part of their life and they have an insight into a part of your life that some people would never understand. That's where the bonding comes from. Now, is this unhealthy? It doesn't have to be, not necessarily. I think it can be unhealthy if you then only ever talk about that thing, if that thing, every time you talk about it, actually causes you to regress, if you're not talking about it in a way to help you heal productively, but you feel like every time you talk about it, you're back into your past revisiting it. If it was like an abusive relationship, you then notice that you're thinking about your ex a lot more than you wish you were. It's bringing up all these horrible feelings. Then you're thinking, okay, maybe this actually isn't helpful. While I feel like I've got a true friend out of it, I feel really like uneasy after talking about it a lot. And that's where I think it can become unhealthy because you're revisiting this thing again and again and again and again and again. And you're like almost like forcing the revisit, like prod, instead of like a therapy situation where you're kind of being guided through like a healing process through someone who's not adding fuel to this intense story. Okay. So it can be definitely very cathartic. Sharing anything deeply emotional is cathartic, especially a shared experience. But then when it's something traumatic where it forms part of your identity and such a big part of your journey, it's even more cathartic. So I think it's just really important to understand like there's a certain aspect of healing that's going on here because I feel understood. Feeling understood and feeling heard is one of our greatest desires in life, and it's a need. And when you find that in somebody, you're getting one of your major needs met. So it feels really good. And that's why it feels so good to bond with someone who's experienced the same thing. But then you've got to identify at what point does this stop being cathartic and healing? And at what point is it now? Am I working backwards? Some people, they form the bond over the trauma, but then their friendship develops beyond that as like a friendship that's not about the trauma, but it's about other things. I think a good way of identifying if it's probably not the healthiest thing is if the only thing you have to talk about is the shared experience of trauma. And if there's nothing else around that, then it's not to say don't have them in your life, but it's to say definitely make sure that you've got an even spread of relationships and you're not putting all your eggs in that one basket because that could cause you to be reliving a lot of things that you probably don't want to be. Okay. Just got to quickly look at some questions. Okay. Once a trauma bond has formed, is it possible for it to break without having to leave. It would be very, very difficult. I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it would require the abuser to definitely be getting therapy and definitely been doing a lot of personal work on themselves. And it would require them to be the ones to want to drive that. You can lead someone to water, but you can't make them drink. You can get your partner to go to therapy, but sitting in a therapy session is very different to intentionally wanting to do the work on yourself. You can get them to sit there, but they could be like in their head, fuck this shit. Everything that's being told is a lie. I'm just doing this because I've been made to do this. Very different. So if it comes from them and if it's genuine and if it's sustained over a long period of time, is it possible? Yes. Is it likely? No. But it's possible. But again, you saying, can we please go to therapy, whatever, that's not really, it's got to come from them. Like I can drive you to the gym every single day, but you're the one that has to lift the weights. You're the one that has to have the consistency. You're the one who has to want to get stronger. And there's nothing I can do for that to happen. It's got to come from you. Okay, here's a good question. Is the addictive on-off relationship between a severely anxious and a severely avoidant person a trauma bond? Well, no, not necessarily based on obviously everything I said in this episode. You're going to find that any relationship where there's this volatility between closeness and far away, closeness and far away, it's kind of this, you're being drip-fed what you want. So it makes you like thirstier for a good thing instead of it just being stable. So that's why when you've got someone who's, you know, anxious, avoidant, or one who's anxious and one who's avoidant, you're getting this like push, pull, push, pull, push, pull. So that's causing a very turbulent relationship. But no, it's not necessarily a trauma bond because there always still has to be the abuser and the person who's being abused. And there has to be that cycle for it to be considered a trauma bond and that like those steps. So not necessarily. Once you've cut contact, how to stop thinking of them fondly or wondering about their opinion? You're going to think a lot about that in the initial stages, but I would, like I said in one of the steps, like also look at other people, how they've dealt with this situation, how they have, you know, grown from it. One of the things that I would do when I was going through a breakup is to, every time I thought of something good about my ex, I would remind myself of three things that either were an ick, that annoyed me, or that were really like not okay. And when I would do that, I'm like, all right, I've evened the playing field. I'm good now. I wouldn't go into this spiral and be like, I used to hate when he would do this. His face would change when he talked to me in a mean way. And that face only ever existed when he talked down to me in that way. And I hated that face. And so then you think, okay, well, that's another thing that I hate. I hated how he fucking brushed his teeth. Whatever it is, just think of three things to cancel out. The one good thing that you thought, and then it helps. Trust me, it helps. And then it happens quicker and quicker and quicker. Then you don't get into these spirals of like missing and adoring when you've already walked away from the relationship. Guys, thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. I hope that was helpful. I hope that it was helpful from the perspective of if you're the victim or also if you're the friend of someone who is a victim or if you have gone through that in the past, it's also really good to kind of look back retrospectively and kind of feel like, wow, that's exactly what I went through and that's why I experienced it this way and that's why I fell into this trap and that's why I kept returning. So hopefully wherever you stand in this, this episode was helpful for you. Send this episode to somebody who you think might need it. Also, don't forget to rate and review the podcast. Follow the podcast. Follow the podcast on socials at DYFM Podcast. Or follow me at Alexis PREDZ on Instagram because I do like polls and questions all the time there as well. That is all. And remember, always be kind to yourself, be kind to your brain. Don't take shit from anyone and especially don't take shit from yourself. Danke! Listener.